Brett Hayes, let me ask you this. You know, you're a bright guy. You have a PhD in government and politics from the University of Maryland. You're associate professor of political science. And I know you have some real expertise in the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, along comes Obama. He announces that Merrick Garland is going to be his choice. The Republicans say no and no to anything else you want to put up to the Supreme Court. The Democrats, of course, don't have a majority in the Senate. But they have enough to stall. They have enough to stall the whole thing because, you know, you got to have 60 votes to get past the filibuster unless you do what we call the nuclear option. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think you kind of summed them up. you know, they.
Sorry about that.
No. There clearly is going to be quite a bit of animosity among Democrats to whoever becomes Trump's nominee. And I think for two reasons. One, because of the fact that the Republicans would not move on Merrick Garland's nomination, something that we just really hadn't seen in that way before, and something that seemed kind of, you know, fundamentally unfair from the Democratic perspective. But also, you know, Trump has said that he is going to appoint justices that will be willing to overturn Roe. And this is a central issue to Democrats.
On abortion.
Trump's statement on that, you know, in the past, Republicans have kind of played that coy. It's been, you know, we're looking for strict constructionalists, wink. And they've had a nomination, they've said things like, well, the case law is, you know, fairly well settled, wink. You know, that, you know, these types of things. And they refuse to kind of answer any kind of questions. Well, now here we have cards on the table. And so that gives a good deal of ammunition for the Democrats to resist. That being said, going back to the second point, they have the filibuster, and you know, I think that they will use it if there is a clear instance where a nominee is opposed to Roe versus Wade. If in fact they go out on the record, then you know I think that gives them every incentive to filibuster. However, that filibuster is vulnerable. I think it is very much on the table. Last term, House Republicans were urging McConnell to consider taking the filibuster off the table immediately. And he has said post-election here that that's not something he wants to do. He has said that Republicans need to be cautious in acting like they'll be the majority forever. McConnell's also somebody that I think takes the rules of the Senate, I'll say, very seriously as kind of a historical legacy and wants to protect them. But, you know, should Democrats engage in that, you know, kind of stonewalling across the board, then I think the filibuster as applicable to Supreme Court justices is very much in question.
So that the so-called nuclear option, in which it won't be 60 votes, you'll need 51. But the Republicans were very clear during this election that no matter who was put up by Hillary Clinton if she won, they weren't going to allow her to appoint anyone. So why shouldn't the Democrats do exactly the same thing?
I can't speak for Democrats, but if you are concerned about basic functionality of government, you cannot have that position, right? That you must have the ability of the political branches to fill vacancies when they occur.
But the Republicans didn't respect that.
Well, sometimes you have to be the more grown up and mature party.
We call that losers.
You will lose, right? I mean, and let's be clear about that, right? This is, the consequence of the electoral loss, that you've basically lost the Supreme Court for likely 10 to 15 years.
Sure.
And it could be longer. So, elections have consequences. But if, in fact, you are going to ensure that the government continues, that it can do the things necessary to ensure good governance, you sometimes have to swallow bitter pills. And I think this is one of those. Now, that's not to say that, you know, that Trump can just appoint anybody that he wants and the Democrats just have to get on board. But there has to be a limit to the kind of opposition that you put down. And you know, you could play that game forever, just never fill any vacancy that occurs in the Supreme Court.
Which is exactly what the Republicans said they were going to do. They said, we don't need 9 people on that court. Maybe we can have 8. Okay, so Brad, I happen to agree with you. I think that there's something that the Democrats have to show here, that which is that we play square, they don't, or we play fair. But it can be have enormous consequences to women in the United States, for example, to blacks and Hispanics in terms of civil rights laws and things of that kind. So I want to go to a different place with you now, and that is with Chuck Schumer's role as leader of the Senate minority. Now, I know Chuck fairly well, and I'm on the air a lot of times here. I like him, and I think he's got a lot of guts. But what does he do? Does he really put up a red flag?
Well, so I guess there are two different ways to play it, right? You can use the Republicans a la 2008 as a model, right? The Obama has the huge win, right? The Republicans take that retreat out in Greenbrier, out in West Virginia, and they come up with the no strategy, where they simply will oppose anything that Obama puts on the table, right? And that was their policy. They would not participate in good governance. So, you know, when it came to health care reform, right, the Republican position was not, hey, let's make this a better law. It was, let's oppose, period. And frankly, it was kind of successful, right? You know, here they're out in the wilderness after the 2008 election.
It wasn't nice, but it might be successful.
No, right. It was terrible for governance. But for, you know, here we go, 2010, you know, big success. You know, you miss in 2012, but you come right back in the next two elections. You know, it sort of works. So there's that approach where you just are going to dig in, you're going to pose everything, and you hope it works out for you. I think probably the model that Democrats adopt, in part for the very reasons that we talked about, that they seem to believe in the functionality of government, is the pathway that Elizabeth Warren just laid out. She gave a speech to the AFL-CIO the other day where she said, we will work with Trump on measures that will protect the working and middle classes, which means that she's willing to do things like clean up the political process, clean up the economy, increase jobs and salaries, et cetera. But they will fight any measure that is perceived as bigoted or any measure that hurts, in their estimation, the working and middle classes. Right. So you protect the administrative structure that levels the playing field. You ensure that any kind of immigration reform includes fundamental fairness, that's not splitting up families, that you protect health care, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that that's probably the model that's adopted. And so you really dig down on some of these things and you will fight to the point where, you know, if you're going to lose, you're going to lose spectacularly, but you're not going to give in on some of those core issues. But you're willing to, you know, work some with Trump and to acknowledge that there are areas of the nation that have been in some ways left behind, that have real problems, that have been unaddressed for quite some time. And I think in some ways that your question about Schumer then really raises this question about where's the Democratic Party heading, right? Schumer, I think, is very much associated with kind of the centrist Democrats. But I mentioned Elizabeth Warren, and that's kind of the other wing of the party, the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. And the question is, will the party then move to the left? And I think what we're going to see is not so much there's the kind of battle between some of the old guard, but like, where is the emerging young talent in the Democratic Party and what position are they taking? Are they taking kind of that center position that was occupied by Obama, or are they moving into this more populist wing that has proved so powerful in the last election?
Always great to talk to Brad Hayes. Brad, we haven't even touched on the cabinet or any of those other things. When you come back the next time, and I can't wait for you to do it, we'll talk about all of that. Thank you, Professor Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College, and we are delighted when we see your face. Thanks again.
Always a pleasure, Alan.